Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
You wouldn't be leading the pressing line with Zerski as your Mel Gibson, like, as your Braveheart, you know? And Spurs rattled past them.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
Wait, shit!
I wish I was 50 years younger and I'd kick your ass.
My fans can be the harshest critics, you know.
And they often are.
A wife is often the harshest critic of her husband.
I thought I was invincible. That's what you're trained to believe as a sports person.
There was 4 million people in Ireland who knew much more about managing football teams than I did. When it comes to music, I can spoof with the best.
Your sporting career is the best time you'll have, and, you know, you have to hang on to it for as long as your life, because everything else is pretty crappy.
And this is not light. Stephen Rothschild has never spoken to Jimmy McGuinness in his life.
Off the Ball Saturday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to 5. You can WhatsApp us today 0879 180 180 or text us 53106 at a cost of 30 cents. This is the Saturday panel. Next Saturday marks International Women's Day. From this Monday to next Sunday, Governing Body Sport Ireland is hosting Women in Sport Week for the fifth time. The aim is to highlight female visibility and leadership in sport. There are a number of webinars this week on coaching, officiating, leadership and supporting teenage girls in sport. In the studio to discuss it all, we've got the former Ireland Grand Slam winning rugby player and Donegal footballer Nora Stapleton, who's Director of Strategic National Governing Body Programmes and Women in Sport Lead with Sport Ireland, ex-Irish international swimmer and coach Bethany Carson, Women in Sport Manager with Sport Ireland, and Fela Macken, former Limerick Camogie boss and current sports coordinator at Limerick Local Sports Partnership and coach of teenage girls' teams. Fela, Bethany, Nora, how are you all doing? Welcome to the studio.
All good, John. Thanks a million for having us in today.
Well, you're very welcome. Looking forward to the discussion. Let's just get into this week. Why is this week important, Nora?
Look, we started Women in Sport Week, you know, some time ago now. It was kind of off the back of the introduction of the Women in Sport policy, and we were keen to try and find ways to make women in sport more visible, not just athletes and the amazing athletes that we see across media or in competition, but all role models, whether it's your coaches, your officials, women in leadership roles, women working in sport, because sometimes they can be, you know, slightly invisible as well. So that's why we created Women in Sport Week. And it's something now that all the national governing bodies, the local sports partnerships, everybody's really gotten on board. And it's just that opportunity to, as you already said, promote, highlight and maybe even motivate some other females to get into that women in sport space in the different roles.
So your background is Ireland women's rugby player. You played in the Grand Slam team 2013. Initially, you played for Donegal footballers as well. So it's been an interesting journey for you.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes you forget to look back at everything. But it has. I feel really privileged. You know, I had a really nice playing career in different sports. Really enjoyed it. Loved the teams I played with. I'm really lucky to have been working, 16 years in sport now, and kind of have gone from grassroots through national governing bodies with both GAA and the IRFU, and now I'm with Sport Ireland. So I feel, you know, it's a really nice mix there of the playing and the working career. And now I've kind of gone into a new chapter where I'm a mum of three crazy boys, age 5 and 3 and 3. And I know I have a bit of a wildlife trying to tame them. I'm just off the GAA pitch for the GAA nursery this morning.
Brilliant.
And straight into this, you know. So it's a new chapter. And now I'm beginning to experience what it's like to be a parent. And that's a massive juggle, you know, parent. Working parent, and you go into the new challenges of how do you stay fit and active, and so it's nice to be able to even bring that to the conversation now as well.
Time management is key now for you.
Definitely.
Never having enough of it. Bethany, so swimming to me is an all-consuming sport. That is what strikes me as. So what's your journey been like as an athlete and as a person?
Yeah, certainly. It's a grueling sport, but it's also really rewarding. You have to be intrinsically motivated to keep going with all of those hours in the pool. So I represented Ireland for 10 years, finished up in 2015. Got the opportunity to represent Ireland at lots of different countries, European Championships, World University Games, all of that fun stuff. And after I finished up, then I moved into coaching. I just gained so many perspectives along the years and just sort of picked up those coaching qualifications as I was going. So I was a coach at the National Centre there with Swim Ireland in Dublin for a few years. And then I was in a dual role as Women in Sport Lead at Swim Ireland and coaching at the same time. Then I had my first baby and experienced the challenges of trying to coach and have a family.
Very good.
And then now I'm in Sport Ireland as our Women in Sport lead with my second child now. So yeah, similar to Nora, definitely picked up a lot of perspectives along the way and the different challenges that females face at different stages of life, and some solutions.
And Phelan, you've been involved with AHAN, your club in Limerick, and the Limerick Camogie team, your manager of in the past as well. And you've been a PE teacher. So you've had a long journey in educating and coaching young people and young women.
Yeah, absolutely. I came to Limerick in 1986. A Mayo man came down to Limerick to study physical education and have pretty much kept Limerick as my base ever since. And then unfortunately turned my back on Gaelic football and kind of completely got immersed in hurling, and have kind of had a really good number of years been involved in coaching and supporting and the fitness elements of that, and also in the coaching element. And then the PE side was also important in that, you know, you can see what you can do in PE, but for me, I suppose timing was everything. So in around 2001, 2002, we started seeing community sport taking off in Ireland. And, you know, you were seeing development officers being hired across different organisations. You saw the growth of the new sports partnerships coming in. So for me, I decided that the PE side maybe was not something I was going to have my most passion in, but looking at how to get into community sport and look at that broader context. So that took me into the Sports Partnership Network and in coaching and education and leadership. So it's been an interesting journey, and even the journey of the sports partnerships themselves, you know, how they've grown and the different areas that we now have responsibilities for. So the person that came up with the concept in the beginning, you know, would be very proud of what they look like now, 22 years later.
So role models, for example, we have so many of them now in women's sport. The 4x400 relay team were so amazing last year. What Phil Healy, Charlie Maudsley, Sophie Becker and Rashid Adeleke, who's got her own individual career as well. Leading jumps jockey Rachel Blackmore, Leona Maguire in golf, Kelly Harrington, Olympic champion on two occasions, world champion boxer Katie Taylor. What tangible difference are their achievements making when you see what you're doing on the ground?
For us, so role models they're vital, you know, and I don't know, if I think back to when I was younger, I didn't have any female sporting role models. Like, I love sport. I was pretty much head down, played whatever was going for me. And I remember growing up just wishing that I could play in the Premier League and knowing that I never could. You know, so because that's the only kind of visibility I saw, and soccer would have been a big sport for me. So we know that role models have a huge part to play, particularly in that, I guess, that pathway side of things for young girls and young boys to know that they can aspire to put on a representative jersey, whether it's your county, whether it's, you know, running vests for Ireland, whether it's swimming, whether it's any of the team sports. So we can never dismiss them, and the visibility of those are so important. But we also know on the flip side that there's a lot of girls, there's a cohort of girls that look at, either don't see the role models because they're not looking for them because they've already disengaged from sport. And that's really sad. So no matter how much we can promote the role models, there's a cohort of girls out there where they just won't resonate with them. They've disengaged from sport. They don't think they're sporty. And they just don't see themselves in it. So that's really sad. And, you know, I'm sure we'll talk a little bit more about that. But I think, you know, for the athletes we have now, they're absolutely phenomenal. Like, you just, and that goes to, like, yes, we can see them now, they're more visible, but the pathways are in place. You know, they grew up where they were able to get really good training from a young age. They were involved, whether it's academies or, you know, different structures like that, that they were working through. A lot of those women that you're seeing now who are performing on the world stage would have had that really nice pathway through as well.
You hear the horror stories in the past from years ago about lack of facilities, lack of expenses, lack of mileage, lack of gear, being treated like second class citizens. Is that something that you experienced and has changed?
Changed the side of the pitch, yeah, I won't lie. as you know, we probably all have, but we know it still exists today. Like, I'm looking at Phelan, the local sports partnership would have a big role to play, and facilities and infrastructure would come their way and things like that. Same swimming pools, there's such a lack of those as well. So facilities, infrastructure is a big issue. And then particularly for girls, you know, we've colleagues in work who are training, they're under 14 girls, their daughter's team, and they don't have toilets. They have to remind the girls to go to the toilet before they get in the car to go to the pitch. So things like that are a huge issue. Hopefully the likes of, you know, we've new local sports plans with local authorities and local sports partnerships working together, new kind of large scale infrastructure funds, sports capital now. When you apply for any sort of sports capital like that, you have to show that it's about making sure the facility will be used equally by boys and girls, men and women. So all these things are really important as well. But I said, I don't know, Limerick, what are they like down there?
Yeah, it's the same. You know, you're looking at, we have our small grant scheme, so we'll be looking at prioritising specific areas around female sport, about more sports being more inclusive. We look at our educational offerings, more courses for female coaches. And you're kind of looking at the broader context when you're dealing with, say, the bigger NGBs and all of that, how they support access, you know, to playing facilities, that they don't get the worst time slots, you know, they get regular time slots. And then the actual very simple things, you know, around the toilets and accessibility of the toilets, etc., in our facilities that are so essential, you know, for females to participate and being comfortable in our sports. So it's making sure that we are, I think, you know, Keith Wood, when they started talking about professional sport and somebody asked him, what does professional sport mean? And he said, like, pretty much taking away the excuses. You know, let's bring in all the things that we are now reducing, that being an excuse or a barrier. And I think that's where we really have to strive going forward. And I think the, you know, the local sports plans and the national sports policy, which the current one is up for review now, and that the new one, again, will really focus in on ensuring we have that equal coverage across everything.
Visibility is a great starting point, but then the actions from that are the mm-hmm. next thing.
Yeah, and that's where Sport Ireland comes in. Like, you know, our job is to try and help and guide the sector, so the local sports partnerships, the national governing bodies, with resources and supports of how to improve their programmes and their offering to cater for women and girls in sport. So that's what our day-to-day is about.
Has male allyship, when it comes to the role of women in sport, improved from your experience, Phelim, and what ways can it manifest itself in a positive manner?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting one, and it's a new enough concept. And had a moment yesterday with Mary O'Connor at the Federation of Irish Sports Awards, and I was literally discussing that topic with her. And we were saying that, you know, we've had a few good examples in recent years, the likes of Cora Staunton, the likes of Fiona McHale, that all took on, you know, coaching senior club teams in Mayo. And I suppose what myself and Mary were kind of seeing it as, that it's not that tokenism. You know, it's, you are recognising this person because of the qualities they're going to bring as a coach. You know, it's not that they're going to do the WhatsApp group and manage the WhatsApp group and all of that. It's the coaching side. So really, you know, being fair to the level of the coaching experience and knowledge that they will bring and what additional value that's going to bring to that coaching team. So we need more of that. We need more examples of that. And we need that not necessarily to be highlighted all the time, because sometimes, you know, when you're looking at allyship, you're also not wanting to be patronising. So you're trying to get it on the merits that you're there for, and that's something that hopefully will grow.
What's the biggest thing for you? Sorry, go on.
No, I was just going to say, like, I think Phelim is probably an example of that male allyship piece, you know, so he's, through all the work that he's doing, coaching, the support then that he provides to his female colleagues, making sure that when they, you know, the work that they're putting in, the programmes they deliver, they get the credit for it as well. Those things are so important. And that goes across the board. Like, I think when it comes to supporting women, whether it's like, we've some really nice research in the leadership space, where the people who answered the question, where women answered the question, said, look, I won't lie, when a man stands behind you, has your back and promotes you, unfortunately, it still holds so much stronger than when a woman does it. So there's still this kind of perception, you know, that leans more towards the men when it comes to leadership roles and what they say means more. And then for women to be able to say, actually, I'm progressing further when a man promotes me, because people hear his word sometimes over a female word. So it's really disappointing, but it also highlights such an importance for men when they're leaders or when they're supporters of women's sport. It just really helps accelerate things, and it really brings that level of equality through faster. Yeah.
When it comes to, say, the challenges and the issues that are at the forefront of your mind when we're talking about the jobs you're doing around Sport Ireland and women in sport, what are they?
Well, the big one at the minute that we're trying to work on is the teenage girls' participation. So a couple of years ago, we did some research. It was the Girls Get Active report, and it looked into trying to figure out what motivates girls to be active and what are the challenges. And from that research, the girls gave us some really useful guidance and came up with like 8 key principles to how to engage teenage girls. And that's where Her Moves was born, which is a systems-wide campaign that Sport Ireland has designed, but it's supported by the local sports partnerships and the national governing bodies who drive it out and create. They've been working so hard since it was created to come up with new and exciting ways to cater for teenage girls in sport. So a lot of the challenges that came out, and you might have seen on the International Day of the Girl last year, and we released a video called It's Complicated. And that came about by the whole thing about Her Moves is that it's by the girls for the girls. So we have to talk to the girls if we're creating a program for them or, you know, creating a team. And we asked them to write a breakup letter to sport. And through that, they came out with this like amazing content for a video. And it was all about these challenges that they're facing. So menstruation and sport, the shouty coach, balancing study and sport or whatever extracurricular activity they're doing. And it's just a very different experience for girls, and that requires a tailored support. So that's what Her Moves is all about. It's trying to kind of redefine what sporty looks like. Like even myself as a young girl, like the young mind is so strange. Like I just never thought I was sporty, because I came second in sports day every year, which is hilarious because a lot of people would be happy with the silver. But I was even just looking up at my older brothers who were getting gold every year. And I was like, oh, I must not be sporty. It just must not be my thing. And we all did gymnastics. My big brother is Reese McClanagan's coach, Olympic champion. So, you know, I had him above me doing gymnastics. And I was like, oh, I'm not as good as Luke, so I must not be sporty. And then all of a sudden, completely by accident, fell into swimming. And that was my sport. I was really late to swimming, like as a child learning to swim. I remember in primary school, a boy in my class laughing at me at how bad I was. And then 2 years later, I'm into the club and I'm shooting up and leaving that kid in the dust. But, you know, just that, if I had never had that experience to change from my mind thinking I'm not sporty, it must not be my thing, to then going on to become an international swimmer for 10 years. Like, it's just, we need to engage, especially girls. Like I say, boys and girls, there is a dropout rate, but what we're seeing between primary school and secondary school is there's a 29% drop of girls participating in sport compared to a 10% drop in boys. Now that's not good either, but the girls is where our focus is, obviously. So yeah, we've got a real opportunity to engage those girls.
Yeah, I think as well, John, that's what's really important is the activity type. You know, how much opportunities they have. You know, we have our traditional games, you know, which are fantastic and that are in every village and town and county. But not everybody is going to be a hurler, a Gaelic footballer or a camogie player. You know, so, for example, in our area in Ahan, you know, our proximity to the University of Limerick, we have athletics, gymnastics, swimming, basketball, you know, archery, hockey. You can literally take your pick. But if you live in a very rural community, your option may only be Gaelic games or maybe basketball, you know. So it's how do we look at other offerings that cater for teenagers, that will have them being physically active, but that appreciation of what is being physically active. And I was just telling the two lads outside, you know, when I got the train up this morning, I was sitting beside two girls who were coming from Cork and they were both studying for the Leaving Cert on the train. They had their notes out. So I got chatting to them and said, no, I'm coming up to talk on the radio about, you know, women in sport. And I asked them, you know, how was their journey in sport? And it was so amazing that both of them told me that they were not sporty. They don't do sport. That they didn't really like sport in primary school. But yet, as the conversation went on, I found out that they swim, that they walk, and that they occasionally go to the gym. But nowhere in the conversation did they consider them sporty.
So they differentiated sport from activity.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we were saying, is that part of our problem in some of the ways? you know, sports partnerships, even though, you know, we target everybody from preschool to older adults. But yet that's a motivating factor, we were saying, for older people to come to the programme saying, my team, my activity, I'm sporty today, I'm going to my classes, I'm going to my sports. So it's trying to find that balance where we're able to ensure that, you know, teenage girls feel that they belong in that activity type and recognise it for what it is, whether it is sport or physical activity, but it's also, you know, looking after their health and well-being.
Yeah, I think it's like you can't, you know, you can't move away and you don't want to move away from the competition aligned structures, but it seems to be that young girls, especially coming through, when they think of sport, they think of winning, they think of being part of a team or being or running a race, or that there's an outcome at the end of it, and that they're just, they don't have that level of interest, or when they have other things that they're interested in, they feel that they have to pick one or the other. So we find when we talk to the girls is, look, I don't have time to be the player that the coach wants me to be or at the skill level that I need to be, and I feel like I'm not good enough, and I feel like the other girls don't think I'm good enough, so I'm just going to leave. So there's nothing in between there for that person to stay engaged, stay attached to a sport or a couple of sports, even to bring them through those teenage years where there's so many other things that they're juggling. And then by the time, you know, they hit college, they start to find their new interests and they can keep going at it. But Her Moves is a massive campaign for us. It's going really well. It's really visible. And definitely, if anyone's listening in, you know, have a look at some of the social media stuff. Hermoves.ie is the hub there. There's a heap of resources and people will definitely see a lot more of that as the week goes on.
It seems to me that the definition of success is massive around this.
In what way, John?
But like, just like that maybe from what you're saying is that if people don't feel they're a success, and what is the paradigm for that, then they don't feel, well, you know what, I might just quit this.
Yeah, I think it's more if they don't feel they're good enough, you know, and every sport's very, very different. But a lot of our sport, like a lot of the engagement in sport when people are young, as kind of Phelan outlined there, tends to be more the team oriented sport. And so if you're feeling like you're not good enough there, or if you're not selected, you know, and we know that, and coaches would be listening saying, but how do I play everybody? And, you know, we still want to try and get to the final. We still need want to pick up points, and the girls don't like losing every week if I just keep rotating players. So like all of those are challenges. But, you know, is there a philosophy that coaches should adopt at the start of the year that everyone buys into, that everybody gets a certain length of game time? You know, and when people buy into that, there's kind of more of an acknowledgement and acceptance. Or are there other activities that you can include for the girls that might not get as much time on the pitch as others, but they still feel like they're part of a team? Because girls love feeling part of the team. They're really sociable. Like we all know, we've all coached them. They definitely like to talk more. They definitely show up to train and to see their friends, sometimes more so than to what they're going to learn on the pitch, some of them. Others are dead on, you know, want to, it's what's happening on the pitch or the court or whatever it might be. But it is about trying to cater for both. And look, we're trying to work with a lot of the national governing bodies. But for example, the LGFA have a really nice Her Moves programme that they're piloting at the minute. They've done a lot of research with the girls, asking them what they'd like the game to be. And they're planning to come out with an app, hopefully, that the girls can use. So it's going to be interesting.
OK, the Saturday panel, we got Nora Stapleton, Bethany Carson and Fela Mackin speaking about Women in Sport Week. If you want to get in touch, there are people getting in touch, 0879 180 180 on WhatsApp, 0879 180 180. And you can also text us 53106. Off the Ball Saturday on News Talk, and this discussion back after the news.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.
This is Off the Ball Saturday. John Duggan with the 3-5. Crystal Palace 3, Millwall 1 in the FA Cup fifth round. It's Preston 3, Burnley 0. That game at Deepdale is a result. In the Championship, later scores Blackburn 0, Norwich 0. Leeds, the leaders 1, West Brom 1, and Oxford United 2, Coventry 3. You can WhatsApp us 0879 180 180. This is the Saturday panel, part two. We're continuing our discussion on Women in Sport Week, hosted by Sport Ireland. A number of webinars taking place this week on coaching, officiating, leadership and supporting teenage girls in sport as we approach International Women's Day next Saturday to increase visibility and participation of women in sport. In the studio to discuss it, we have the former Ireland Grand Slam winning player in rugby and Donegal footballer Nora Stapleton. We have Bethany Carson, Women in Sport Manager at Sport Ireland, a former international swimmer and coach, and obviously as well, Nora is involved in Sport Ireland as Director of Strategic National Governing Body Programmes. And also Phelan Mackens here, former Limerick Camogie Manager, current Sports Coordinator at Limerick Local Sports Partnership and coach of teenage girls teams. So we just have a few texts in here as well coming in. There's a great opportunity coming soon for the GA Camogie and LGFA to merge. The government needs to link all its funding to equal access and completely transparent, equitable sharing of resources.
100%. You know, I think the GA community, you know, aspires to be that community. You know, they talk about being the central component in every community. So this is the greatest opportunity for it to make it one. And then, you know, there are going to be challenges with it in relation to volume and access and pitches. But I think it's the perfect time now to look at how to address that and to bring them in under the one, because there is so much knowledge in all three units that one single unit will benefit greatly from all of that.
Another text, I think paddle courts should be in all girls' schools, appeal to so many and a fun way to keep active.
They are. Well, I haven't played it myself, but Paddle came down and helped out in an event we were running there recently. Bethany was at on stage. But I suppose it's more like paddle is a sport maybe they didn't have access to before. It's about that thing of trying something new. And it's probably not necessarily the paddle court. It's more that the girls have a smaller version of paddle that, you know, the ball, does it move a little bit slower? The court's smaller. They're still hitting something over and back over a net. And I know that might sound really degrading to tennis and maybe to paddle itself, but it's more so that we can be really creative as to how we get girls active. And just what's really interesting about that is girls utilise spaces differently. You know, there's some research that we've seen about playgrounds, for example, and schoolyards. And when they measure the, when they look at, so they put a tag on all the kids and they look at their movement across the playground. Boys use the playground a lot more and in different spaces than the girls do. So we've never done that type of in-depth analysis here in Ireland, but it just shows you like spaces that are being created for boys and girls. Sometimes it's not the same and everybody uses stuff differently and we need to be more aware of that, I think.
You've all these webinars coming up this week. There's one on coaching. You mentioned there before the break on the shouty coaches and how they can maybe put girls off sport and like in terms of the correct way to coach and what will be the I suppose the knowledge gaps and things to get out of this.
Yeah, I mean, and like the shouty coach, it's not necessarily, it depends what you're shouting, you know. So it's all about communication strategies. And like every coach goes through their own journey of finding their style. So you'll find a lot of coaches might start off as a shouty coach and then they actually start to learn their own style and become more confident in themselves. So yeah, Tuesday we've got a really cool webinar planned. So we are doing Coaching the Female Athlete. It's free, so anybody can book on. It's taking place at 8 p.m. so hopefully after all training is finished. And we're being joined by three speakers. So I'll be hosting it. And then we have Danielle Logue, who's performance nutritionist at the Sport Ireland Institute. We have Sarah-Jane Cullen, who is a physiologist at the Sport Ireland Institute. So they are dealing with Olympic athletes, high performance athletes day in, day out for years. So they've got heaps and heaps of knowledge. And then we've also got Mark Keneally, who is Athletics Ireland's endurance lead and also a 2012 Olympic marathon runner himself. So loads of intel to get from them. We're going to be looking at REDS, so relative energy deficiency in sport. It's a big issue in females, but it can affect males as well. So we're just kind of raising awareness about that, red flags and strategies in terms of the coach and what to look out for and how to signpost. And then that kind of feeds nicely into body image, about the coaches, like communication styles around that. Like even myself as a swimmer, I had a really positive sporting career. Like I didn't thankfully have any eating disorders or any issues with my health. But I even remember, you know, when I'd come out onto poolside, you're quite exposed as a swimmer, you're in very little clothes a lot of the time. And coaches would often say, oh, geez, you look great. Like, you're so fit. Like, you're looking really, really fit. Best of luck this weekend. And I'm like, okay, that's great. And then if I was at the next competition and they didn't say that, then I'm wondering, oh no, am I not looking fit? So even positive remarks can also have like that ripple effect. And it's just about learning like those those cues and how to communicate and kind of focusing on what your body can do. It's not about how it looks. The whole look good, feel good, compete good is not a narrative we really want to use anymore. We just want to look at what your body can do and appreciate it for what it can do. So we'll have some really interesting discussions on Tuesday evening. Join us, please.
And I think just to add to that, I suppose one of the best developments in recent times, particularly supporting our work both in sports partnerships and national governing bodies, is research. You know, so we're very fortunate in Limerick that we have the physical education and sports science departments right beside us where we're based. And it's about linking in with them to get research to kind of underpin our thoughts and then looking at how that might leverage funding then, because you're evidence-based. But that equally then has transcended into the coaching side. So on top of all our sports-specific national governing body sports, we now have a suite of coaching children, coaching teenage girls and coaching young people that is also layered on top of the NGB-specific coach education. And that then really upskills the coaches on that one size doesn't fit all. You know, for example, if we look at coaching, which is the why, the how and the what, a lot of the time when you're coaching men's teams, they want the how and the what. They don't really focus too much on the why. Whereas if you're coaching a female team, they want to know the why. When they understand the why, they will then do the how and the what better. Mm-hmm. So like when we bring coaches into female sport who have only ever coached male teams, one of the things they'll start asking after a couple of weeks is, what's with all the questions? You know, the questions are so important for the female players to understand what we're trying to get through here. And they really then have a greater appreciation for the how and the what because they understand the why. And it's important for the coaches to know that and get into that space of knowing that because you are a player or because you only coached male teams, this isn't necessarily going to just transcend as easily into coaching female players because they have different motivations.
What was your own experience as Limerick Camogie coach?
Oh, very similar. You know, I suppose I came up through starting out in Ahan particularly. I was the fitness coach, so I had the good fortune to work with excellent managers and coaches like Eamon Meskell and Liam Sheedy and Joachim Kelly, you know. So you were kind of getting that understanding of where the coaching was moving. That was late 90s into the early 2000s. And then obviously with the physical education background, when I then started working in with female teams, it was being able to bring that balance of my PE background into what I learned then on the sidelines and also the coach education courses. So I think a lot of the times as well, there was a lot of gratefulness from female teams that actually somebody was going to come and coach them, you know, which was also probably not the best way for them to be getting teams. They take coaches because they're just happy for somebody to come in. I remember looking to get a management team one time and I asked 14 different people to come on a management team for a female team. And it was just such a challenge. And a lot of the times it was because people weren't comfortable maybe to be able to coach in the female space and they'd only ever known the men's space and then felt that maybe we won't be able to develop the players as best we can and the shouty coach and the behaviours and all of that, that, you know, how will we manage that in that space? But coach education has changed that, you know, and it's not just the NGB specific coach ed, it's the additional where we're looking at how it is to coach young people, how it is to coach teenage girls and how it is specifically to coach children and getting that layered approach.
I was just going to add in, I think what Fagan probably also highlighted there is in the past we have seen a lack of female coaches. So obviously it's a key pillar of ours. We've seen a big change in the last number of years. So there's an increase in the number of women who are now doing coaching courses, particularly at the intro level and the level one. So that number is going up and it's getting closer to the 50-50. So now when you go down, like as I mentioned, I was down, you know, this morning, it's boys and girls are out playing and it's probably 50-50 between the mums and the dads who are out coaching that age group. So we're seeing at the younger ages, you know, it's more equal in terms of the number of female-male coaches, especially the increase of female coaches doing coaching courses. What's really missing is the number of women in high-performance coaches. So Bethany talked about how she unfortunately dropped out, you know, for that period of time when she had kids, because it is. It takes a lot to be a high-performance coach as you kind of come into parenthood. We probably haven't changed how high performance coaches deliver and work in terms of the amount of time that they have to give. And that's something that we're trying to look at as well, whether it's shared high performance roles and things like that. But it is an area we'll look at, because the percentage of women in high performance coaching in Ireland is probably around 13%. So it's quite low.
When you were an athlete playing rugby, playing Gaelic football, was it all male coaches?
I had all male coaches, yeah. Until one of my most memorable female coach was when I went and played with the Barbarians. So just finished with Ireland, and I was just, you know, feeling a bit useless, as you do coming out of a bad tournament and things like that. And, you know, you're not sure as to how you are as a player at all. And then the opportunity to play with the Babas just came, and I was felt really lucky. It was the first time the Babas had played an official match. And anyway, we got together and went off and played. And Giselle Maher was the coach, and she just blew me away. She was absolutely amazing. How she motivated the team, like, obviously, you know, her knowledge and stuff, the sport was, you know, there was nothing to question there. But it was more around how she was able to get a team of strangers from all around the world, some who didn't speak English, all in the same wavelength, to be able to go out and play a match coherently together and to understand calls and things like that. But just everything, I was hooked on everything she said and did. And she was phenomenal. But no, unfortunately, I didn't have too many. But I just hope I haven't forgotten anybody now through the teams.
Whoops.
But there's a good few teams there that I guess I would have played with.
So we have other webinars this week, and we've got an Accelerate Action event on Friday at the campus in Abbottstown, Bethany. 100 women in sport leads with keynote speakers. I suppose there's a growing space for leadership. I think, I mean, the obvious one is Sarah Keane, is the OFI president who oversaw the greatest ever Olympic cycle for Ireland in Paris.
Yeah, I had the pleasure of working with Sarah for 6 years in Swim Ireland. So yeah, Friday we're having an event on the campus. It'll be like, we've got a really nice, strong women in sport network now that Nora had started building many years ago, where we have this lovely mix of local sports partnerships and national governing bodies coming together a couple of times a year to work together on the same challenges in terms of around women in sport. So yeah, this is one of these key occasions where we get together again, and we've got something exciting planned that you'll just have to wait and find out.
Yeah. But we will, like, you know, the number of female CEOs still quite, you know, maybe it's 30% now across sport in Ireland.
Yes.
The local sports partnerships, very different. It's about 50-50 in terms of the role that Phelim has. And so there's 29 of those across the network. But the number of women in leadership positions is increasing, and we've seen a huge, you know, a huge change there, especially at board level. When the policy, so we talk a lot about the women's sport policy, obviously that helps shape a lot of what we do. But when that first came out in 2019, we had about 24% of boards were made up of females. We've had many interventions and a lot of support that we try and give to the sector, and now we're up at 48% of boards are made up of females. So, you know, really it's, you know, they're 50-50, they're thereabouts. A lot of all the national governing bodies and local sports partnerships all have to achieve 40%, you know, yeah, or else it does impact their funding. But what we're seeing now is, even when some of those bodies might drop under the 40, it's the commitment is there. And again, it's probably, you know, important to highlight, like, Women in Sport Week is coming up next week. We have our key themes throughout the week. International Women's Day is a big day in the calendar. But the week is more so about showing what we all do all year round, as opposed to focusing on trying to, you know, dedicate and just do something big for this week. And mm-hmm. and I think that's what's really important. So, you know, when it comes to leadership and it comes to women on boards, now we see that the sports sector are consciously and really aware of ensuring that they maintain that 40%. So if they lose a few female board members for whatever reason, or just, you know, the usual term time up and things like that, they know in their recruitment who they have to try and get back onto that board to maintain the percentage. Yeah. So it's all about the commitment.
And just to add to that, John, I think as well, one of the things that's important for the sports partnership as a network to look at is, you know, creating those opportunities for women in leadership. So, you know, thankfully, Limerick Sports Partnership, we have our VIP program, which is supporting teenagers around leadership. But both Meath and Sligo, for example, have an excellent program looking at women within the communities around promoting them into that leadership space. And I think the more exposure we have to those kind of programs will then create this greater platform of people that are going to be confident and have the skill sets to really take on that leadership role.
And officiating as well, there's something on that. We've had Joy Neville, for example, in rugby.
Yeah.
Maggie Farrelly in Gaelic games as well.
We've had both of them out before, so it's time for a few others.
But yeah, and we have Claire Dowdall has just started in Sport Ireland as the officials development manager. So this is her remit and she is absolutely delighted to get going with that. So yeah, she's hosting the webinar on Thursday night. So again, it's 8 to 9pm and she'll be joined by a couple of different officials from basketball, IRFU and LGFA. Names to be announced in the next day or so. But yeah, again, like it's all about actually going back to the leadership piece again and back to the research that we did at the end of last year. Something that I found really interesting was around that, like the imposter syndrome, which we've heard a lot in recent years about females kind of suffering that lower confidence. And what we actually found in the research was it was contextual, so that females might struggle a little bit to take that first step. So whether it's to go for a promotion or to go for a new job or to take on a position on a board. But once they're in it, they're reporting their confidence is very high. They're very confident in their knowledge and their skills and their, you know, they know that they should be there. So kind of understanding that and a reminder to everybody out there to give, whether you're a male or a female, to give that female friend or colleague the nudge to do it. I know I haven't taken one job in my life without a nudge from a friend or a colleague. So it just takes that first step and then the women are absolutely flying it. And that's why we're seeing these improvements in leadership for women.
For women in sports, say the next 5 years, what do you want to see, Nora? When it comes to the landscape here, you're in the studio today and if you had a crystal ball with the best outcome.
So what I'd like to see, what I'd actually love to see, and it kind of ties into the visibility and media side of things, I would love some sort of digital platform where every single schedule, fixture, live event and athlete and player profiles can sit for every Irish female athlete. You know, and I'm kind of looking at them, like surely there's an AI digital solution for mm-hmm. that, but it's really like it tends to be, particularly in women's sports still, if you're wondering how such and such got on or you're looking for, you know, you're having to Google all the time and you're constantly searching, whereas a lot of the time the male news stories are just presented in front of you and, you know, and you keep reading from one story to the next. So I think in the next 5 years, because, you know, like look yourselves here, we can see that media organisations are trying to increase the level of coverage and, you know, that's all definitely, it's really welcomed, but we're still probably, you know, under 10% across the board, most likely. We know in print media we are anyway, we've looked at that recently. And look, we've a lot of research coming up over this year, which we'll do over the next couple of years to try and just understand the figures a little bit more. But I just think if to get those stories, to see all the fixtures, all the schedules, to be up to date on everything, I would love somebody to create a platform where that's just there all the time and constantly updates. And just on the other side, what I think we will see, so I think we'll see attendance rising at match fixtures. I think there's a lot of so people now going into some of the roles are really invested in looking at how do we present a lot of our live fixtures differently. You know, the match day experience is different. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of that when we go to the likes of rugby, soccer, GAA, hockey, some of these live events. I think we'll see and it'll feel different. And I think we'll see the attendance figures rise. And I do think if we look at overseas, so what's happening in other countries, you know, spectatorship is going through the roof. And what I really hope here is that we run into a facility issue. Because, you know, we don't have too many big stadiums. And if we have sellout for some of our main events, then there's going to be fixture clashes between men's and women's. And, you know, that's a really good problem to have. But I do think that 10, 20 years down the line, that's going to be a major problem.
So for 5 years' time, what do you want to see as the best outcome for the whole landscape?
Well, that was a hard one to follow, Nora. For me, like sport has just given me so much that I would hate to think that there are girls and boys out there that wouldn't have the opportunity to try it and take part. So I'm hoping more variety. so that we can cater for, like, especially if you look at the population right now in Ireland, we've got more teenagers than we will have for probably the next 35 years based off birth rates and projections. So like, it's a real opportunity to get it right and to engage those teenagers. So for me, I'd like to see that area really improve in terms of what we can do to cater for teenagers better and how we can offer more opportunities to them.
For you, Fenim?
Oh, it's very similar to the two points already made, but I suppose that emphasis on, you know, Binny Cullen, who is Head of Research and Innovation in Sport Ireland, has a really good session that he delivers using Lego, where he looks at the various demographics and their participation in sport and physical activity. So he has set us a challenge that we really have to hone in on the 13 to 35 year olds at the moment, that if we can engage them in meaningful physical activity and retain them in that space, then our demographic in relation to, you know, physical activity throughout the life cycle will grow immensely. And I think also as well, we have to look at the different variety and types. So even if we think of Her Moves, that in 5 year time, if we have Her Move clubs, you know, that people go to participate in meaningful physical activity, and that variety in what is the attraction. Like, we have a program in Limerick at the moment, which is called Balance and Brew. And basically the carrot of doing a bit of barista is the motivation to get them in the door. So Laura has been rolling that out at different sites in Limerick. And the numbers are just flooding in because it's a little bit different, a little bit creative. And they are also doing the meaningful physical activity, but there is something additional in it. I know Barbara Birmingham for a good few years in Limerick also had a soccer program, but she also added in a beautician element to it. And again, the numbers, particularly in very disadvantaged areas, were growing. So we have to look at additional carrots to support and complement the programs that we're doing, because that's what motivates people who are not engaged in physical activity, because ultimately our goal is to get more people involved. So if we have to be more creative, you know, then that's the way forward.
And just maybe following on what Fagan said, like, we've spoken a lot about all the different things happening, but a key thing for Sport Ireland is Women in Sport Week is pretty much down to the national governing bodies and local sports partnerships. So I would encourage anybody, you know, if they're wondering what's happening, local sports partnerships have loads of stuff going on, not just for this week, but throughout the year. So they should definitely look up, you know, their own one, and then the same with their national governing body to see, because there's a lot of webinars being hosted and events being hosted by them as well. And Phelan touched on a point around coach education for coaches of teenage girls. So there is a coaching teenage girls workshop that is rolled out as well by the national governing bodies and the local sports partnerships. So again, coaches of teenage girls, if they're wondering what that is, they just need to probably just get in touch with their own sport, and they'll find out more information about that.
Just recently, there've been a couple of incidents that have been controversial. So in Australia, a presenter called Marty Sheargold on radio station Triple M parted ways with the company after he said the Matildas players, the Australian women's soccer team, reminded them of 10-year-old girls and implied that the matches were boring. We also had a kind of an exchange on TalkSport with Adam Brazil saying that the Manchester United women's team was not as important compared to the bigger picture. So do you still feel that in the world there is a barrier when it comes to how women's sport is spoken about and labelled?
Unfortunately, by some, yes, you know, and I think those two comments, like, they made a lot of big headlines, and like, it's rude, disrespectful, you know, just really not necessarily about the sport either, you know, and it's kind of their probably wider views or societal views as well, perhaps. And I think, you know, you only have to remember Matildas and the World Cup and the full stadiums and the buzz that was, well, that was there, and just the sheer, like, what they brought to the nation and the nation behind them. So I think it's really sad that, like, for some individuals that they can lose sight of that really quickly and revert back to those kind of comments. And the same about the one Man United, and, you know, it's fair to, and I think the other reporter did well to call out and say, well, I'm interested, you know. So it's, I think when you're put behind a microphone and you're asked, you know, to give your views, you have to remember that you're speaking to not just your pals nearly, you know, or a small cohort of group. I think it's much wider than that. And you're speaking to, yeah, a full nation of people who are listening in. And that you have to remember that, I think, and you have a bit of responsibility and a duty to remember that when you do have an opportunity to get behind a microphone.
Yeah, and like even if you look back at the Olympics last year, what almost impressed me more than the medals was the way the athletes spoke, their stories, like the messages that they were giving to the people on the other side of the camera. It was really inspiring stuff about keeping on going through challenges and setbacks, and that's the sort of messages we want to hear. You can do all of the education and the raising of awareness you want, and there's still going to be some people that have these silly opinions and bad communication. But I think the more it's challenged, the more people will listen, and we're going to have to move. We're moving in the right way. And I know team sport in terms of females is almost in infancy still compared to the males game. The depth is going to keep going and continuing, and you just can't argue with it. Like, it's these are just people that have silly opinions.
I would say a lot of people, when they're watching that 4x400 team, weren't thinking of the gender of the team. They're thinking of the merit of what they achieved.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And I think social media, unfortunately, has kind of created that kind of environment. Like, if we think of even the negativity towards Ursula Jacob when she was commentating on Gaelic Games, we've had people in Limerick, unfortunately, thinking that the growth of the girls' game in Treaty is impacting negatively on the men's game, you know, and people just start this commentary on social media, and then other people then go, "All right, so that's why they're not doing well," which they're not even related. So we unfortunately have to block out the noise, and then we have to champion those that are so good and so competent in commenting on our games, be they male or female. And that's something that we need to get used to, because there are more and more people now that have that skill set, that are very capable and competent, and that's who people tune in to the sports programs to see and hear.
I think as well, that's when, you know, where you need your male allies to speak out and to challenge other men and their views, because it happens behind and off camera, behind closed doors, off camera, where they will. So you need that to happen on air, where it's, you've got your male champion, your male ally, who's sticking up for the women's game, which we've seen loads of good examples of. But I think that's when it becomes really powerful.
Yeah.
You're from Ahan, so, well, obviously you're from Mayo, but you're probably an honorary citizen of Ahan. So the Morrisseys are big down there, Dan and Tom.
Tom,
what are the winners?
Absolutely, yeah. There's a lot of Morrisseys. There's Paddy as well, who's actually sunning himself out in Perth at the moment. So they would have been, you know, I suppose, real ambassadors in the club growing up. They were probably some of the first players to really become addicted to the gym and seeing the complement that the gym can play in their development as hurlers. So, you know, we've two fantastic role models now in Dan and Tom in relation to the motivating of our younger players coming up and them sharing their time. And obviously, you know, Limerick has been on an incredible journey of success, you know, from hurling. But I think as well, if you look at it, when those lads, particularly Dan, broke into the Limerick team, you know, they weren't flying, but it was his diligence and his resilience in relation to his work ethic that he then went on that journey where they have multiple All-Stars and All-Irelands. But I think as well, you know, we were talking about role models earlier. You know, Limerick hurling is on a high, obviously, so they're really capitalising on that. You know, more and more kids want to play. There's, you know, the jerseys, they're all turning up in the Gaelic grounds with their hurleys and their slitters and all of that. And, you know, we need that in all our sports, you know. So thankfully, Limerick hurling has that at the moment. And I believe, you know, it was announced at the Core Grants Awards by John Foley that, you know, Limerick will be back this year, you know. So he was putting his coins on the table, being the chairperson of the board of Sport Ireland. So, you know, we need good role models in our clubs, but they then are equally as important within our female sports as well. And thankfully we have those. We've had Niamh Mulcahy in our club, you know, has played for many years. But then equally we've had a lady called Pauline McCarthy, which I believe ye covered a few years ago, who won a medal in her mid-50s playing camogie for St. Albies. She played with Ahan for a number of years. So role models come not just as superstars, but they also come as players that are just dedicated and just keep turning up every day.
We had Nadir for Irish women's rugby after your success, and it seems that the team is back now and the structures are a bit better.
Yeah, I think they are. Like, I think you probably, we would have seen that last year, just some of the results. Obviously, beating New Zealand, just huge, huge occasion for them. You know, if you know anything about any sort of high-performance team, you know they're training hard, you know they're thinking about their performance day in, day out, and every single player wants to get better. Obviously, preparing for Six Nations and then into the World Cup later. It'd be interesting now with Lynn Cantwell in, overseeing the kind of strategic objective of the game there, working with both high performance and participation side. But there's a good commitment from the IRFU, and there has been over the last number of years, and an understanding and willingness to turn things around. And I think now that mixed with, you know, eventually the contracts coming through, there's nice the underage setup, like between under 18s and under 20s, having younger teams there where girls get not even an opportunity to train at a better level, but that experience of travelling to fixture, of getting to play against other countries and suddenly realising, oh, right, I thought I was good in Ireland, but now I know what level I need to be at. You know, all those things are really important. And I'm really looking forward to, like, I'm hopefully going over to Italy for the Six Nations match and then hopefully to some of the World Cup games as well. But it's a huge, huge year. And, you know, the team could do amazing. They really could. They've been kind of building in that direction. So fingers crossed that we get some really nice results now.
Luke Carson is your brother, Bethany, and he's Reese McClenahan's coach. What happened on the day of the Olympic gold medal with you?
Oh my goodness, there was a lot of emotions. So I was unfortunately not over in Paris. I was with the kids. We actually ended up going on we're coming back from a family holiday. It was too much to try and squeeze Paris in there as well. But we were in the airport in Faro and on all crowded around my phone because of all the screens that were there. Gymnastics was not on one of them. So there was about 10 of us crowded around my phone and I was holding my youngest Zach and I would say he was close to going to hospital. I was squeezing him so hard. I couldn't sit still. The nerves were through the roof. Not for, just wanted Reese to do a clean routine. We didn't care about the results just as long as he could show, you know, what he's made of. And he was just phenomenal. It was amazing. We screamed the whole airport down and I woke up the next morning feeling like I won a gold medal, and I think most of Ireland probably did. And yeah, just seeing Luke as well, the relief on his face, like it is a relief I think for a lot of athletes, because they know that what they're capable of, like he recently knew in Tokyo what he was capable of and it just didn't pan out that way. So just to see it, like it was like a fairy tale.
You're waiting 3 years for what, a minute?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It is amazing.
You get one chance and it's judged. It's a grueling sport as well. Me and Luke have often had arguments over which is harder, swimming or gymnastics. So we haven't got an answer yet.
But. Well, Luke played his part and reached it as well in the gold medal and captured the nation. Bethany Carson, Nora Stapleton, Phelan Macken, thank you so much for coming in, giving your insight, and let's hope women in sport goes from strength to strength in the country.
Thank you, John.
Yeah.
This is Off the Ball Saturday News Talk. After the break, we're going to be across to Mayo, Castlebar, Tommy Rooney ahead of Mayo against Kerry in the Football League. We're back after this.
The Saturday panel on Off the Ball.